Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friends, my partner in radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we are without Ronald again. This is feeling like kind of like a routine, because Ronald is doing what Ronald does best, which is retreating, getting away, recharging. I had an old car once, Pipe, a classic car. It was a 74 Triumph Spitfire, so an old like British convertible. And the thing about that car was it didn't work.
Is that when you fell in love with all things British?
Yeah, dude, kind of. I just love the lines on the car, and I loved it. Had like a wood grain dashboard, a push button starter. Everything was real like analog and old school, so it was kind of easy to work on. But that car only worked about half the time. But when it worked, it was great. You know what I mean? And I kind of view Ronald in the same way. Ronald's kind of on a 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off sort of schedule, I think, with his life and with the Happy Rant. And when he's working, he's great, but he just doesn't work a lot. So kind of like that old convertible of mine, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a, I'm trying to think of an athlete who he would be the equivalent to, you know, sort of a, like the star player you get, but you're like,
he's
like
only going to be available Leonard, half of the time.
But when he's like the Kawhi Leonard of this program, where like if you properly load manage.
Yeah, dude, load Ronnie, management is huge with Ronald.
You know, he's a vital contributor, possibly a star player, you know, can lead you to high heights. But don't expect him to play all 82 games. Like, save him for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Put him in at the right moments. Just let him sit out some games.
There's kind of a Boogie Cousins quality to Ronald. You know,
he's a little less cantankerous.
Definitely less cantankerous. And I think the rest, you know, factors into that. He's the most well-rested guy we know, for sure. And maybe that's what helps keep him good-natured. But at any rate,
yeah, Piper. That's what's probably too. So I have one other quick thing. So right now, Ronnie is vacationing with his wife.
Of course he is. He's worked for two weeks.
You know,
got to get away.
2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. Yeah. But his vacation has a hashtag assigned to it.
Oh, of course it does. Yeah, dude.
So
I don't know.
It's the Ronnie and Missy road trip.
Jesus,
hashtag. And you can go see all sorts of quaint pictures of Maine and of baked goods and lobsters and coffee. And he uses phrases like ye old diner and things like that. So he's all the way on brand.
Dude, you know what's funny? Like, Ronald, if I didn't love Ronald, he would be so easy for me to hate. You know what I mean? Like, he would be so, like, just imminently hateable, except that I know him and I do love him. So it's probably good. This is like exhibit A of why you need to know somebody beyond their like internet persona. You know what I mean?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really important.
Although I feel like if people pay attention to my internet persona, it's fairly accurate.
That's good though. See, I think that's kind of the wheelhouse you want to be in.
That's what I'm going for, but it's definitely a blend of like snark, which is fairly accurate, and sincerity, you know, and hopefully some thoughtfulness thrown in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, I hope that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Whereas like Ronnie's internet persona is only one side of him. It's not false.
Right.
It's just incomplete. It's only one side of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your internet persona is zero sides of you. So, which is, I guess, it's neither accurate nor inaccurate. You get an incomplete grade.
Good question. Does this show count as part of my internet persona, though? I feel like it does. In the sense that, like, we're putting this out via the internet, and people can download it and listen. And
yeah, I feel like podcasts are, but they're like internet plus, because there's tone of voice. There's, you know, if you read a transcript of this, we would probably sound much more like a-holes than we actually are.
Yeah. Maybe.
Whereas if you listen, you have to have like zero sense of humor to not get that we are not taking much seriously.
That's true, man. That's true. Yeah. Well said, Pipe. Well, Piper, we did a unique thing in that last night, yesterday evening sometime, you opened our social media following up to questions, like a Q&A, like an ask us anything sort of motif. And the responses came pouring in. We got an unbelievable response to that. So we're going to kind of break these up into two episodes, but we're going to work our way through some of these questions, which I'm excited about. But before we do that, dude, I got a question, like a media question to ask you, because I found a new show. I'm on a new show that's actually an old show. And I love it, dude. I absolutely love it. I can't get enough of this show. And it's one that I blame your dad for this, because when it was coming out in like the late 90s or early 2000s, we were in our like John Piper Get Rid of Your Television phase, which lasted like, I don't know, a couple of years. And so we missed a couple of years ago.
That lasted about 18 years for me until I had the freedom to get my own TV.
Exactly, dude. Exactly. Well, we chose it for a couple of years, which, you know, I don't know what that says about us. But at any rate, the show is Gilmore Girls. And I want to know from you, have you watched it? Do you love it? Because to me, it's like one of the most inhabitable TV worlds ever created. It's incredible.
You just made all of the women in my life so thrilled with that statement. So Lauren, who is now my wife, for those of you who weren't paying attention to previous episodes, I recently got married. And then my daughters all love that show. And Lauren has it memorized.
Yeah.
Like just – it's like the – it's sort of the – you know, some people play music in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
She plays the Gilmore Girls in the background like while brushing her teeth in the morning and stuff like that. So
fascinating, dude. It's just I don't blame her at all.
Woven – yeah, just like woven into her life. I don't like it at all.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, let's go a couple minutes on this. I want to know why.
So there are things – there are shows that I dislike because I think they're trash.
Okay.
This is not one of those. Mm-hmm. It's a show that I watch and I'm like, this is for other people.
Sure.
And it's just not for me.
Uh-huh.
The machine gun banter gives me a headache.
Yeah.
And Rory Gilmore has like a top five most annoying voice on television.
Oh, fascinating, dude. See,
that's just a hang up that I have. Then the style of it is I'm just like, yeah, this is the style for somebody else.
Yeah.
I don't like this style of TV at all.
I get it.
It's too much.
Yeah. The machine gun banter is terrible. It's way too on the nose. It's very kind of 90s TV. You know, everything's too clever by half. I don't know. I think I'm really connecting with the setting. I do like the characters. I do like the dynamic between, you know, Rory, like young Rory, who's very innocent, and her mother, who's very worldly, but, you know, they're trying to have this relationship. And I can relate to this, I guess, as a father, where like, I'm really, now that I have teenage boys, I'm really enjoying being their friend, but I still have to be their father. You know what I mean? And I think that's the tension for the mom on the Gilmore Girls. I love the guy.
Well, and she became a, like, the part of the premise is that, like, she was a teenage mom who's now, so there's that, like, there's a closeness in age that confuses or makes that tension you just described more pronounced.
Absolutely. So this is my theory about the show vis-a-vis, like, the world that they create. I feel like it's Cheers for women. This show definitely wasn't written with men in mind, but nevertheless, like, the same things that do it for me about Cheers also do it for me with this show, in terms of like people that you want to be.
Is Cheers gender kind of more gender specific?
No.
I mean, I feel like it kind of had to be because it was like in the 80s, which means that women didn't have say in anything. But
Cheers is more, I mean, it has more male characters for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it had a few really strong female characters. But I think,
yeah, they definitely hold their own.
They definitely hold their own. But I think, like, at the end of the day, it was probably more a show for dudes, where this is probably more a show for women, but like, it's really pleasant, man. Really, really pleasant. It's got early career Melissa McCarthy, who's amazing. I always wish that she got more minutes in more eps. Like, she's like it's kind of like if you watch the Clippers and like Lou Williams is coming off the bench, just like, you know, going bananas,
torching somebody.
And you're like, why isn't he getting more minutes? It's kind of the same with Melissa McCarthy on Gilmore Girls. But
I feel like it's almost like James Harden when he was on the Thunder, where you're like, he's better than Russell Westbrook or as good. And yet he was like the sixth man on that team or whatever. And she's by far the best.
Oh, totally, dude.
The best performer in that show. And don't be deceived by like the dumb comedy she's done since.
Yeah.
She's done some good movies, but like as an actor, she's pretty brilliant.
She's very brilliant, very funny. But yeah, if you had watched the show in 2000 when it dropped, nobody would be like, I bet she's going to have the best career. You know what I mean? Just because she was, she got so few minutes. But she
created, I don't, what is the name of the lady who plays Lorelai? It's Lauren something. Or
I have absolutely no idea. Yeah.
Anyway, she went on to star in, what was the other show about? There's another big like Feely family show. Was it Parenthood?
Yeah, I kind of steer clear of those shows, man. I really do. Cause I feel
It's another one of those like emotionally manipulative. We're going to create scenarios that you fall in love with characters and then we're going to rip your heart out.
Somebody's going to get in a car wreck and die. Yeah. In those shows is my feeling.
And
about
she, you know, she, so she have, she's had like a 15-year run.
Yeah. That kind of show.
Of like critically acclaimed and like cult following mm-hmm. TV shows. I mean, which, and that have had pretty massive followings. Yeah. So good for her.
Dude, that's a solid career. I would take that. You know, I would take that, you know, 1,000 times over as a career. So tip of the cap to Gilmore Girls. Apologies that it's taken me 20 years to get on board with the show, but I'm loving it, man. Really, really loving it.
I will guarantee that if you had had daughters, it would not have taken you this long because it is. Yeah. It seems to be sort of woven into the fabric of the female entertainment mind that this is a thing that everybody has at least one friend who adores this show, so they get introduced to it. Like it's just a given.
That's fascinating, and I can totally see it. I can totally see why. So, great job to that show. It's making my pandemic a little bit less depressing. So also not depressing, Pipe, the number of questions that we got on this this Ask Me Anything. So let's
overwhelmingly amazing.
Let's enjoy our cup of Redbud City Coffee Roasters, redbudcoffee.com, enter Happy Rant at checkout. You get a little discount. Lots of blends, lots of single origins, lots of other coffee terms.
I think it's a Kenyan one right now as we speak.
Solid, dude.
It's so delicious.
It's great to be in the coffee business, Piper. It's good to be coffee mm-hmm. moguls partnered with Redbud City Coffee Roasters. So, Pipe, kick us off, man. You've got the keys to the kingdom social media-wise.
Yes.
Guide us through these questions. I'm sure they're not all amazing, but I bet we got some bangers, some amazing ones. So guide us through it.
Yes. So for the listeners, here's what we intend to do. A little caveat. Y'all sent so many questions. We can't get through them all. So I'm going to pick and choose. And don't be slighted if yours is not selected. Also, if it was a sports-related question, we're going to do those in a different episode so that it's like it's just sports-themed. So we're going to save the rest of you from that. And then that way we can give those the attention they deserve. Because the second question we received is a great sports question that I'm not going to even read right now.
Oh, man.
Because it'll lead off that next episode.
That's a teaser.
So we'll do that. Yes.
I feel teased by that. So I can't wait.
Good. Radio professionalism right there.
That's right.
All right. First question comes from Caleb Berg. He was the first responder on this, I believe. And it said, did either of you read the Left Behind series?
Dude, shout out to the first responders, man. He's the real hero. You know.
Yeah, real hero of Twitter. Way to go, Caleb. First responder to this Twitter poll.
Dude.
Did we read the Left Behind series?
I'm ashamed to say that, yes, I did read the Left Behind series, but I have to give some context to that. I was living...
Can I jump in with there was a follow-up comment that says, well, Caleb, did you know that Ted wrote an end times satirical book? And then there was a whole conversation where people's minds were blown by this. So,
yeah, dude, I did.
Sorry.
I just needed
to give that context, which I thought was wonderful.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that because it'll be a seamless promo to that book. But so like 20 years ago, again, like right around when Gilmore Girls was dropping in real time, we had graduated from college. We were spending a year on the mission field in Lithuania. And there was very little American media to have access to because this was kind of before the internet or like right at the beginning of the internet and there wasn't a lot of options there for us. So the people that we were kind of staying with, they had every book in the Left Behind series. And because there was little else to read in English, I read them. Even then, even in my like infancy as a reader and a writer, I knew that they were hot garbage. And I knew that one day I would write a satirical end times novel of my own called Re-Raptured. So we actually, as a company, Gut Check Press, we just put out these two. It's kind of a two-part series. So we have Re-Raptured and Re-Raptured Again. We just released one huge omnibus with both parts in it. And these are hilarious. And they work as a novel. So it kind of works as like the great American novel and as a Rapture satire. Very proud of it.
Did you know that you would stay in a penthouse apartment funded by those books while you were being wined and dined by Moody Publishers?
I had no idea. But when I walked into Jerry Jenkins Hall and smelled like the borscht and saw the huge like self-congratulatory mural of Jerry Jenkins, that's when it like clicked for me that it was all coming together. You know, everything was connected, Piper, and it was a beautiful thing. Now, have you read the Left Behind novels?
I read a couple chapters of the first one, and I would put it on the short list of most unpalatable substances to ever enter my brain space. So,
dude, you know what it was analogous to?
I haven't read the rest.
They were like a 90s B action movie. Like a movie that wanted to be a Jerry Bruckheimer film but couldn't quite get there because of either budget or like, you know, casting constraints or whatever. It was like a Brian Bosworth action movie from the 90s.
Yeah, I feel like action movies that are bad are usually, like, there's a fun aspect to them.
That's
because
true.
Because they're kind of so bad, they're entertaining. These were so intent on being, like, wonderful Christian literature, and they weren't wonderful. I'm not sure if they were Christian, and they definitely weren't literature.
That's true. I think they were 0-for-3 on all those points, Piper. You hit the nail on the head, for sure. But what they were was incredibly lucrative for the authors.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things.
Yeah, I mean, I say all this with more than a hint of jealousy.
Oh, most definitely, dude. I wish there was a cluck hall on Moody's campus that had a bunch of old Russian ladies in it. I would take that in a heartbeat. I'd be so proud.
Yes.
I would go there, like, I'd go there 3 or 4 times annually just to show my kids that it exists. I'd be so proud. Maybe one day, dude. Maybe one day.
All right, next question.
Yep.
There's actually a few questions in one tweet. This is from Kevin Adelsberger, who we've partnered with on this podcast
dude,
in the
man.
Past. His wife has written various Bible studies and things, and we've promoted those. So longtime listener and friend of the show, Kevin. So I'm going to read two of his questions, and we can perfect. Sort these out. What book have you regretted reading in the last 5 years?
Ooh. What book have you regretted reading in the last 5 years? Interesting, dude. Do you have one like hopping to mind? Because I'm not sure I do. I might need a minute on this one.
So this is tricky because about 5 years ago is when I had the realization that you don't have to finish a book if you think it sucks.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, I stopped reading books that might lead me to regret if I just didn't like them at all. So I'm trying to think if there's one that I got to the end of and was like, wait, that's what that was?
Yeah.
Let me think on this one.
I don't think I have one, dude. Because I tend to only read stuff that I know is going to be good. Or if I read a book that I know is going to be bad, I bail right away so that I don't have like residual bitterness toward it. You know, I'm just like, yeah, I know this is going to be bad, or I know the dog's going to die, so I'm out, you know?
Okay. So I don't have a book, but I keep going back to the well on one particular author who's still not good. And I don't know why I think he's going to be good.
Uh-huh.
So I tend to really enjoy just like, you know, sort of your Pulp Fiction, crime novel kinds of things, you know, the quick reads that you get at like the airport, Hudson News or whatever.
Yeah.
I keep trying David Baldacci's books.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen that name. I've never read them.
He's written, I don't know, 80 books or something. He's just one of those like 2 books a year.
So 5 less than Jared C. Wilson.
Yes.
Yeah.
5 less than Jared C. Wilson wrote last quarter.
Exactly.
You know, and he has these recurring characters and I keep trying to like them and I don't like any of them, but I consume them all. It's a little bit like, it's sort of that like, you know, the late night Wendy's feeling.
Yeah.
You're like, man, this is a great idea. And then you're done and you're like, no, that was not a great idea.
Yeah.
That's the David Baldacci feeling for me. So I think that's probably the closest because it's been like 20 books in the last 5 years that I've tried that for and they're still not good.
Dude, I do have one that's analogous to that. And it's Tom Clancy, Remember when Tom Clancy novels were huge, dude?
Oh, I've tried his too. Yeah,
and they're literally huge, and that they're like 600 pages, if
yes,
at a bare minimum. So they're big, thick paperbacks. You see them everywhere. There were those like Clear and Present Danger movies that came out in like the early 2000s.
All the Jack Ryan.
So, dude, I really wanted to get on this Tom Clancy thing because I think part of the pathology of this, Piper, is you're like, if I can find an author like a David Baldacci or a Tom Clancy, there's no end to the number of novels. You know what I mean? So you never have to think about what you're going to read next. The novels are cheap. You can get them for like a dime at McKay's or whatever in Nashville. There's just no end to them. So like I tried really hard with Tom Clancy, but my issue with it was so like boringly technical. And there's an example of books that were written for dudes, right? Because it's like, here's...
Hunter, and a certain kind of dude.
A certain kind of dude. It's like, here's 14 pages describing like how the missile system works. And I'm like, no, that's not my thing, dude. I'm not the least bit interested in this.
See, I would compare Tom Clancy novels to like going to a fondue restaurant.
Okay.
Where it's a massive commitment and you do all the work.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah, that's right. That's such a great analogy.
You sit down with a doorstop of a book and like it doesn't suck you in. It's like, no, you're going to work through the user's manual for the navigation system on a nuclear submarine.
Exactly.
Wait, that's not, what? I thought I was going to have fun.
Dude, right. Nope. It reads like a textbook, or it reads like a user's manual for some like piece of electronics that you bought, for sure. I love it, dude.
All right, next question from Kevin, because this one might be quick, but it's rank these franchises from best to worst. And these are not sports franchises. These are storytelling franchises. So best to worst, Harry Potter, Marvel, Star Wars, and Lord of the Rings.
Okay, I can't do this because I have no interest in any of those. Like the one that I would
have, kind of why I asked this question.
Yeah, the one that I would have like the tiniest crackle of interest in would be Marvel, but only because I've seen a couple of the Iron Man movies. I can't do it.
Okay, so I'm going to remove Lord of the Rings from the running entirely because it's not a franchise.
Okay,
it was a trilogy of movies that was based on a classic work of literature. Like there you go. And the books are just a whole other thing.
Yeah.
So we're removing that. And then I think I would rank it in the order that he wrote them, Harry Potter, Marvel, and Star Wars. And I realize there are Star Wars fans who will be offended by that.
Yeah.
But I'm not moved by the nostalgia of Star Wars because I wasn't alive in 1977 or whatever when they came out.
Yeah.
And then there have just like half of those movies have just abjectly sucked.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Harry Potter, awesome. Marvel's amazing because of the scope of their storytelling. Like they've woven together like 40 movies now into a universe.
Yeah.
And even if they've been a little spotty at points, it's pretty remarkable. And then, Star Wars is behind those in my mind. So
dude, which of those franchises, just a little follow-up question, which of those franchises has the most sensitive fan base? The most likely to get offended?
Well, Lord of the Rings, but I removed them with a hat tip to classic literature.
Yeah, dude, the fan base of our podcast is going to be thrilled with you for having done that.
Yeah, I think I just earned some serious reform white dude credit, which is good because I didn't have enough.
Exactly.
And I think Star Wars fans for sure.
Yeah, they seem very sensitive.
I don't think Harry Potter fans. Harry Potter fans just seem to really like fun stories.
Uh-huh.
They're just like, these are the most fun. I read these when I was growing up and the movies were great. Like, it's just a lot more like positive funness. And then Marvel probably has sensitive fans, but like if you're a deep fan, you're just a super nerd.
Yeah.
Whereas most people are like, I like Captain America. That was fun. Thor knocks things around with a hammer. That was fun. So, yeah. All right. Next question.
Yeah.
So there's some context to this one. This comes from Trevor Hogg, and I thought this was a fun, creative question that is right up our alley.
Okay, man.
Did either of you read newspaper comic strips growing up? If so, which ones? And then he'd love to hear how we'd reboot that comic today for a 2020 audience.
Well, you can't do any humor for a 2020 audience. So I think if you did a comic for today, for 2020, it would have to be, it would have to be one of the two extremes, right? It would have to be either insufferably woke, and in doing so would be unpleasant and not fun, or it would have to be like far right. So I don't know. I don't think you could do it.
I think in writing you could potentially.
Okay.
If you did it as satire. So say you wrote one that was insufferably woke.
Yeah.
But was actually making fun of the insufferably woke crowd.
Okay.
So it's so woke, or it's woke about the wrong things or whatever, so that it's so that the people who are not clued in are like, see, they're preaching our message, and everybody else realizes, no, they're mocking your message and your very identity. I think that could work.
Did you read comics growing up? Because I didn't. I only read one thing growing up, and that was Sports Illustrated. That was it.
So we got the Minneapolis Star Tribune delivered to our door every day growing up. And yeah, I would go grab it and I would pull out the variety section.
Yeah.
Because that's where the 2-page spread of comics was.
Nice.
And then the sports section. And I would read the comics first because they go quick.
Yep.
And then I would spend my time with the sports section. That deserved my attention more so. I mean, the easiest answer to this is Calvin and Hobbes, because it's the greatest newspaper comic strip.
Dude, that was such a good comic. So my kid Tristan got into those.
And it doesn't need to be rebooted.
Right.
It just needs to be introduced to the current generation, because Bill Watterson was a genius.
He was a genius. Sorry, dude. My phone just made a weird noise.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah. No, Bill Watterson was a genius, dude. My kid got into those when he was young, and it was kind of like his first entree into reading. And we were really excited because it's like, oh, he wants to read these, you know, and he would like sit in his room and read them and laugh. And it was a great, you know, a great experience for him. And they were really clever. Like he would read them to us and we were just like, oh man, this is clever. So,
my younger daughter did not enjoy reading like standard books.
Yeah.
But discovered a couple Calvin and Hobbes books on my shelf. And I would just – so this is probably when she was – you know, she's probably first or second grade, so she could read. She doesn't like to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd go into her room and find her lying on her bed, like chuckling to herself over the shenanigans of Calvin and Hobbes.
Nice.
And the best thing about it is like they make an 8-year-old laugh, and then you read them. And I'm like, these are smarter than the average adult.
Dude, that's like the best kind of writing for really kids, brilliant. Isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, the kind that like the kid can enjoy it, but the parent who's reading it to the kid can – like also thoroughly enjoy it. That's the target, you know, that's what you're shooting for when you write for kids, for sure.
Yeah. I thought that was a fun one just because I have fond memories of reading comic strips.
Totally.
All right. Let's see. I'll let you pick which of these you want to answer and we'll go with it. Cause they're both from the same guy, Kenneth Gabbert, also a longtime listener. He's interacted with us many times on social media. So two different questions. One was if you two could start a real company, not Ill-Fit Jeans, what would it be? So if we're going to start a company, what would it be?
Mm-hmm.
Or the other option is name 5 movies you can't live without.
Oh, fascinating.
That's from his wife, Megan. So shout out to Megan as well.
Dude, I'm going to answer Megan's question because and this is maybe like a bigger deal and a longer topic, but dude, I just don't think I have the like start the business gear. Like all my friends down here are like slumlords. You know what I mean? Like a Christian who like reaches a certain level of affluence, they all want to become slumlords and have like properties and in the whole deal. And I'm just like, man, I could never see myself doing that. But they all rake, dude. They all just make like, you know, they're falling like backside over tea kettle into like stacks of money, which has not been my experience. So yeah, I don't know. If I started a business, it would probably fail. And I don't know. That's depressing. So 5 movies I can't live without. Let's do that. But I want to hear you on the business thing or the movie thing. If you have thoughts on those. So I'm going to go. I'm going to go with like directors that I like. So I'm going to pick one Wes Anderson, one Cameron Crowe, and then some other ones. So my Wes Anderson would be The Life Aquatic, starring Bill Murray. It's a great movie, very funny. It's kind of about like somebody a little bit older than us who's just kind of past it. I love that. So Life Aquatic would be in there. Cameron Crowe wise, it's going to be close between Elizabethtown and Jerry Maguire, but I'm giving the nod to Jerry Maguire because it has football in it. So Jerry Maguire is on there. Life Aquatic is on there. Die Hard is on the top 5 list because it functions as both my favorite action movie of all time and my favorite Christmas movie of all time. So it's just real versatile in that way. So Die Hard's on there. That's 3. Man, this is it's hard to do like top five movies you can't live without. What else, dude? I feel like I need a dumb comedy on there. Just like a fun, throw it in whenever you need that kind of a comedy. I'm going to go with either like Tommy Boy or Step Brothers. My boys love Step Brothers, so maybe, and I love watching it with them. So I'm gonna put Step Brothers on there. Man, I know I'm leaving some great ones out. Maybe Friday Night Lights or Hoosiers. No, Hoosiers, dude. Hoosiers because it's sports and it's Indiana nostalgia, and it always like gets me. So Hoosiers is on there. I think that's not like. I'm going to look at my movies after this is over and I'm going to realize that's not the list that I want, but it's pretty solid, I think. Let me hear yours.
And it's also gives a fair representation of Ted as a person in terms of the range of types of movies there. So
exactly.
As a rough draft, it's a strong start.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it.
So on the business side, I'm not a starter. Mm-hmm. I don't have it in me. Now, if I was sort of granted the means to start a business, you know, just sort of like you have the time, the money, somebody's going to fund this thing.
Right.
I think it would be like a podcast network.
Ooh, I like it, dude.
Now the problem with that is that I don't like most podcasts.
Yeah.
So I would have to be, but it's my business. So I can just be like, no, I'm not doing your dumb podcast. I'm going to do only the ones that I like. I've always loved the idea of being like a pub owner.
Okay. I love that idea too. Keep going.
But only the idea, because the actual work of it is terrible.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's, you know, one of those. Yeah. And also neither of those are very good at making money. So this is why I don't start businesses.
Yeah. Dude. So, okay. After just minutes ago admitting to you that I'm the world's worst businessman. Hypothetically, what would keep us from starting a podcast network? You know what I mean?
The work.
The work. The risk.
Yeah.
The inherent risk of what? Okay. So what's great about the Happy Rant is that, you know, you and I can always, I think we can always keep a pretty tight governor on what we're saying. And we understand, we can manage ourselves, right? But with a podcast network, you know, let's say we have 5 to 10 podcasts under our like stable or whatever. Somebody says something like inappropriate or to get them canceled on a podcast that we're not on, then we have to deal with the fallout, right? Which would not be fun.
Right. And I mean, we've turned down invitations to be part of other podcast networks or collaborations because it would require giving up creative control.
Right.
And right. I mean, if there's anything that you and I value, it's the freedom to go, no, that's not the way I want to do it.
Absolutely.
And I think Ronnie does as well. Like, there's a reason why he did the kind of music that he did, which is just like, he's like, this is what I like and I'm going to do it.
Dude, if we joined a podcast network, the network might make him be on the show more than, you know, 1.5 times per month.
So. Yeah, it would be like written in, you must show up for 2/3 of the shows and then we'd lose Ronnie completely.
No more vacation hashtags for you, Ronald.
Yeah.
Chop, chop.
Ronnie and Missy not on the podcast. all right. So top five movies. The Sandlot would be on there. I think The Princess Bride would be on there.
Dude, that's a great one. So what?
Purely because I don't know of too many other movies that are as rewatchable. Mm-hmm. And also the older and more aware of just writing and creativity that I've gotten, the more I realize that William Goldman was brilliant.
Yeah, he was a beast.
Let's see. So that leaves me three more. I think I would also go with I would need one just sort of dumb comedy, and it has to be Tommy Boy.
Oh, dude, that was
there
that
are a lot of great ones, but
yeah.
Yeah, you threw it out there as one of your possibilities. So Tommy Boy would be mine. Man, I feel like there needs to be one great war movie on there.
Oh, yeah.
Because, again, reformed white guy.
Exactly.
What would be the war movie?
Dude, that's a great question. What would be the war movie?
The thing is, I love war movies, but I don't watch most of them more than once.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm the same way. It's hard to like be in the mood for a war movie.
You know? Yeah. I'd like to watch people get blown up on repeat. Mm-hmm. I'll have to come back to that one.
Yeah.
And then probably a heist movie. Okay. I love heist movies. So yeah. Maybe like The Great Train Robbery or something, like the one mm-hmm. with Donald Sutherland, which is probably not my actual choice, but it's the one that came to mind. I love a really good heist movie. So
nice, dude.
But then again, I feel bad because no Quentin Tarantino movies made the list.
Oh,
his
yeah.
good movies are so good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I totally forgot
maybe
about Tarantino.
Maybe I would put Tarantino's like Django Unchained on there, because that's my favorite of his.
Dude,
instead of a
one.
War movie, because yeah. war movie
kind
is
of
a genre I love.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It is kind of. You're right.
You could go with Inglourious Basterds from Tarantino, which is both a Tarantino movie and kind of a war movie.
Kind of a war movie. Yeah, and it has some amazing performances in it too.
Totally, dude. I forgot one. Right. I got to add Moneyball to my list. So
okay.
something is going to have to hit the cutting room floor to make room for Moneyball. That's a big rewatcher with me and my boys too. So maybe we cut Step Brothers and slide Moneyball in there. I would feel good about that.
Yeah, that's a good one. I feel bad because there's with five, you leave a ton of good movies
you do.
Out.
You
so.
Do. It's hard.
All right, next question. And this is timely, given the recent announcement that Joe Biden has selected a vice presidential candidate. If you knew that, I'm not sure, because you don't pay any attention to politics.
Yeah, I did.
The question doesn't
it.
Have anything to do with Joe Biden,
thank
which
God,
is good, because we
yeah.
wouldn't answer it. It says, who would we pick for our Ooh. Vice presidential running mates? So
oh, fascinating.
If we were running for president, who would we pick as a vice presidential running mate?
Is that amongst like famous people or real people? Or does it matter?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it just says who would we pick. So that came from Stephanie Hedden.
Okay.
So Stephanie has gotten our gears turning and has stumped us, I think. But
yeah.
really good question.
That is a good one. Does anybody like spring to mind for you?
Yeah. I mean, real people spring to mind, but mm-hmm. I don't know that they would be any fun to talk about on the podcast because
yeah.
people would be like, who's Steve?
Right,
or whatever.
Right.
Oh, wait, I couldn't pick Steve. Steve's a white male.
Yeah, no, can't pick Steve. So let's make it more interesting. Let's take all white males off the table. All right.
Fair enough.
Yeah. We're living in a post-white male world, so they're all gone.
Let's see. I think if I wanted to win an election, it would have to be somebody like Michelle Obama.
Okay.
You know, but there's no way she would do it, because if she was ever going to run for office, she would just like go be president. Yeah, any thoughts for you?
Dude, okay, so I'm going to out myself here in a way that I've never have before on the program, in that I skew conservative politically. So there you go. People are fleeing the program like rats off a ship at this point. I heard, and I can't verify this, I heard Adam Sandler is conservative politically. And I feel like if that's true, now he is a white male. So that's problematic.
But he's Jewish, right?
He's Jewish. So I feel like I could
so
sneak.
So does that change?
I don't
that
know.
Change
I think I could sneak him
rules?
Onto the ticket with me. You know, okay. a Jewish guy and a man of Germanic descent on the same platform, I feel like would be a banger.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Very
so,
unifying.
Yeah, unifying. That's right, man. Let the healing begin. So Cluck Sandler for president. I'm voting for that. That's my pick.
Yeah, I think I would need somebody who is they either need to be the total opposite of me personality wise or be in total lockstep. And I think lockstep would be more fun.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, just shooting down dumb ideas, not
yeah.
taking crap, not, you know, just not sort of doing the political pandering thing. So let's see. I'm not even thinking about political leaning as much as I am like sense of humor and general sensibilities. And I think I would go with like Stephen Colbert.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Granted, he's a very white male. Like he's other than Conan O'Brien, he's the whitest male.
Yeah.
So.
But I feel like he gets away with being a white male by being like super liberal.
Above it all?
Yeah, above it all / super liberal. I feel like the only way you can really get away with being a white male nowadays is to be gay or British. But in lieu of both of those things, he pulls it off. despite being neither gay nor British. So,
and being an outspoken Catholic, like a committed Catholic, which is, I guess that kind of makes you a version of minority these days, because how many committed Catholics do we know?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he's managed to, like, and this is masterful, like, marketing and audience work. He's gotten it done despite being a white male who's middle-aged. So, shout out Stephen Colbert. Good work.
All right, next question. How did the pandemic wedding go? That was from Scott. Scott, listen to our last episode. I gave a breakdown of the celebrity pandemic wedding.
Yeah, it was great.
It was all there. Mm-hmm. So that will have released by the time you listen to this.
Yep.
Let's see. Okay, so I don't know anything about this particular phenomenon, but you might. Okay. And if not, we can wing it. So okay. Micah Perstropey? Micah somebody.
Yeah.
Asked, if you were Hamilton, that's the thing I don't know anything about, who would be your Burr? Which is, and then he gives an explanation, which is very helpful. Your arch nemesis or person who kills you in a duel.
Oh, fascinating. Piper, I think you and I are the last people on Earth to have not seen Hamilton. And in my case, to have no interest in doing so. Like, it's just not, it's not a thing that I see myself doing. Like, I don't like musicals. I don't know. I don't care about, like, that aspect of history that much, which makes me a horrible person. I don't know, but I have plenty of nemeses. In fact, I pick one every school year. I pick a nemesis on campus. But I don't,
I like that you pick one. It doesn't just sort of organically develop. You're like, no, this is the person I'm going to hit this year.
But here's the arc of it, though. Like, rather than killing me with a sword, the way my nemesis work always goes is that we always end up having coffee around like February, and I'm like, oh, this guy's really cool. So, you know, I always bury the hatchet with my nemesis pretty quickly. So yeah, I mean, again, mine are like, they're probably like real people, so nobody would really care about it. And I also feel I'm moving into a post nemesis phase of my life where I'm really not doing the nemesis thing too much anymore, which feels good.
Yeah, I think the nemesis thing also requires a, like, there are people who I just don't like.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a nemesis. That's just an enemy.
Dude, so
this has to be somebody who you had an affinity with, and then they've gone somewhere else, and you're like, nope, now we must kill each other.
Yeah, let's add some shape to the nemesis thing, because I think it also involves, like, a nemesis can't just be somebody you dislike. It has to be somebody who's enough like you that they're doing things that you see yourself doing. They're just doing them at, like, a higher level or a different level. So there has to be some jealousy inherent in, like, nemesis. Yeah. Because, like, so for me, in semesters past when I would pick a nemesis, it was always somebody who I perceived as, like, cooler than me, or they were going to be more popular with the students than me. You know, so it was somebody who had posed a threat. You know what I mean? Opposed to just, like, somebody who you disliked. That being said, I can't really think of anybody for right now. And we really haven't started school yet. And we haven't been in real school since, like, February. So, you know, it's not, I'm not feeling real sharp, like, nemesis wise, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, it would have to be somebody who kind of comes from the same sort of conservative, evangelical, reformed world, but has moved towards being ultra cool or, like, social media influencer.
Yeah.
In sort of a version of this thing that I just eschew and abhor.
Yeah.
But they still sort of claim the same ethos as I do.
Yeah.
Which makes me resentful. Uh-huh. And I'm struggling to come up with any particular person.
So for you, it would be like if Tim Keller had a kid and he was trying to do the same stuff as you. And for me, if it would be like, I don't know, if there was some middle-aged, like, Christian dude who used to write about sports, who is, you know what I mean? Somebody who's, like, trying to do your thing.
Yeah.
I feel like I have nemesis feelings for almost anybody who is, like, trying to be an influencer. You know what I mean? Which I think is a category that it exists now. And it not only does it exist, people have no shame about it. Like, yeah, hey, I'm doing the influencer thing, you know. And
I think the other version of Nemesis is like the person from the same theological camp who's no fun and has no sense of humor.
Yeah.
And is kind of like they're the public voice of, like, they're always like, here's how we should think about. Yeah. So I think I basically just said the Gospel Coalition is my nemesis. But yeah, that sort of version, except not older than me. You know, if they're 55 and up doing that, I'm like, yeah, that's okay, whatever.
Exactly.
But if they're like 35 to 45 and they're doing
like
that stuff.
Yeah, like in your age wheelhouse. Yeah,
stop trying to be, you know, Kevin DeYoung or whatever. Although I don't know how old he is.
He's about our
age. He's probably younger than, younger than I think.
Yeah, yeah, he's like exactly. 40, you think 42 of him as 60, going on 67. But he's actually just like 42. Yeah. That's funny, man. Yeah, no,
but
that's good.
In terms of Nemesis, I think it has to be the social media influencer. The other crowd, I just sort of shrug at, and I'm like, yeah, I've come to accept that. But,
dude, I feel like for me, leadership douche I could very easily go there Nemesis wise. Or
see, I put them in the camp of just people I don't like.
Yeah, that's
they're
true.
They're just like, they're just enemies.
That's true. You know what I realized, dude? And this is semi but not entirely related. I feel like I'm a launch pad for friendships, like fame wise. So what happens is people are friends with me first, and then like we do a project or two together, and then they realize they can access like a higher grade of like, you know, like the next tier of famousness, and then they upgrade. And that sounds like self-pitying and self-loathing. It really isn't. It's more of just like a funny observation. You know what I mean? I'm like the starter. I'm the starter kind of famous evangelical friend, and then they upgrade. I don't know. That's not Nemesis territory though. It's just more of an observation.
Yeah, that makes sense. And their whole publishing company is like that. Like they're the discovering publishing house, but they never like keep the big authors.
Yeah.
So they,
sure.
You know, they start with this publishing house, they publish first, and then it's like, oh, now they're off to Thomas Nelson to go get paid a lot more money.
Yeah. They sign with the Yankees, you know. The Yankees of Christian publishing.
They were on the Rangers farm team, and then they went to the Yankees.
Exactly.
All right. Becky Wilson, that is Jared C's wife, would like to know, how is Ted's book blurb coming along for Jared C? And she says they expect nothing less than artful prose. So any updates on the book blurb?
Yeah, well, I've read 4.5 pages.
You're nearing the 6 that is the limit.
Exactly. I'm probably not going to read anymore. I might read another page and a half between now and when the blurb is due. And they're going to get a blurb. Here's how it's going to go, right? They're going to, and this is in middle age, Piper, how I keep myself from getting bored. In the span of like a four line blurb, I want it to work as a blurb. Also, I want it to work as like an in-joke for people who know the backstory of like me and at Jared C. Wilson. So it's going to work as a blurb. It's going to work as an in-joke. And it's also going to be clear to the Wilsons that like I really haven't read the book. So
especially after saying so on this podcast 8 times.
Yeah, if it checks all 3 of those boxes and still works as a blurb, then I'll feel good about it. You know what I mean? And here's how it's going to go. I'm going to spend... Even though I haven't read the book, I'm going to spend an inordinate amount of time getting it to work on those 3 levels. So that's the update. I hope they like it. I wonder, Piper, like who, what's the range, what's the floor and the ceiling of like, what's the floor and the ceiling of the caliber of person that he's going to get to blurb this book? You know what I mean? Like who's going to be top of the mountain and who's going to be at the bottom? I feel like I'm going to be at the bottom.
I really hope there's a Jerry Jenkins blurb on there.
Does at Jared C have access to at Jerry Jenkins? Is that a thing?
But I mean, it's possible.
It is possible. I mean, it's very possible.
I'm just trying to think of like Christian novelists.
Yeah.
And yes, you could hear the scare quotes around novelists.
Dude, how many Christian novelists really are there? You know what I mean? I'm sure there's way more than we know of, but.
You mean outside of like Amish romance?
Yeah. Could he pull
Jeanette
like,
Oak is offended by your question.
Yeah, dude, could he pull like a Jeanette Oak or a Karen Kingsbury to throw a blurb on there? Because if so, that would be a big deal, dude.
I have a question. Are Jeanette Oak and Karen Kingsbury real people, or is it like the people who wrote the Hardy Boys where it was like...
Jeanette Oak and Karen Kingsbury are actually like a 64-year-old dude who's just writing under both of those pen names.
It's probably like a collection of 64-year-old dudes who like teach economics and are just do this as like a...
Dude, seriously, it's the same guys that wrote like, you know, Moneyball or
Freakonomics.
Freakonomics, that's the one I was trying to think of. Yeah, yeah. It's like Stephen Dubner, you know.
They're just toying with the evangelical Christian females.
Here's a market bubble that I can exploit. Let's throw a bonnet on her and see what happens. You know, let's have a blacksmith and a school teacher and we'll get there, you know.
That's pretty genius.
So high end would be somebody like that, like a Jeanette Oak, a Jerry Jenkins. Do you think he's gonna like
high end for him would be like not in terms of his level, but like his preference, my guess would be like if he could get like Leif Anger to do this, who you can get access to. He's a private dude, but like he doesn't have like people you have to go through. He's just reclusive.
Yeah. Dude, who's the highest end blurb you ever got? Like the blurb you're most proud of in your career.
Most proud of? I mean, here's the thing. I feel like growing up in the house that I did, I'm unimpressed with all the people other people think are famous.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't feel like a thing to reach out to your famous reformed evangelical people.
Sure.
I've been turned down by those who I would have been excited about. Uh-huh. So, you know, Tim Keller shot me down a few times.
Timmy K shot you down. That's fascinating.
No, that's unfair. Tim Keller doesn't even know that I asked.
Yeah,
Tim Keller's people have shot me down multiple times.
Sure, sure.
I think I asked for a Rick Warren endorsement and got shot down by his people.
Ricky.
I mean, you know, fishing for marlin here. We're not going for like sea bass.
So. Exactly, dude. Fishing for marlin. I love it. Dude, Kenny Mayne blurbed a book of mine at one point. ESPN Kenny Mayne. And it was not too long. It was like right around the time where I was stopping doing stuff for ESPN, but I was starting to do like Christian. He blurbed The Reason for Sports, which was a Christian like essay book that I wrote about sports. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never even really considered trying to get endorsements from people who aren't in the sort of Christian thinker world, you know, so sort of getting out into the, like, who are prominent Christians who live other lives, you know, they're in broadcasting or in business or whatever.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like that's not my wheelhouse. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But doing that, the sports ones are pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. I think we have time for one more question considering we've been going for 52 minutes at this point. And so, listeners, for those of you who sent in questions who we're not going to get to, we'll just have to do another episode.
Yeah.
So Jeff McFadden, who is he works with Dwell Bible, another longtime partner of ours, and he's also a faithful listener of the show. Jeff McFadden asks, who could beat Furtick in a fight? Anyone? And I don't know if he means like in the world or just from this show. So let's start with show and work our way out.
Oh, dude, me for sure, man. I don't see myself losing to Furtick. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I feel like he's a vanity muscles guy, but it'd be like if you like kicked him in the shin, he'd keel over and act. He'd be like a professional soccer player. He went down like he got hit by a sniper.
He'd be a flopper. Yeah, he'd be a flopper.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think anybody who spends that much time on their grooming.
Uh-huh. I'm not afraid of that person.
Probably not a real tough, aggressive fighter.
Yeah.
I also bet he has a glass jaw. So,
a square jaw, lantern jaw, but glass nonetheless.
Yeah, that just presents a nice big target, though.
Yeah. Okay.
What would be your fighting strategy Stephen Fike? Is it just like you know? So you're in there, you tap gloves. Mm-hmm. And they're like, ready, fight. Do you just like go right at him or do you kind of feel him out? Or like, we're talking boxing here, not
And I did used to box, so I've got a little bit of like cachet in this world, I guess. But I think I would go right at him like early career Tyson and just try to, and just overwhelm, you know, I would get him out of there soon. Cause I think he would. I don't want to give him time to think about it. You know what I mean? I don't want to give him a chance to feel comfortable in there. So, I think I would get right on top of it and get him out of there quick. What do you think?
Yeah. See, I have a feeling that he would kind of like pause and try to like hype up the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just like sucker punch him while he's waving his gloves around and like trying to, he would treat it like it's a WWE
thing
where he's like standing up on the ropes. You just go up and like knock him down and then.
Yeah. Such a performer, it would be hard for him to stop performing. And that would be the opening that I would need to turn out the lights pretty quickly. Now, did he mean people on the show or did he mean like other pastors?
Well, let's break down some other pastors too. Yeah. I mean, there was another listener who was like, "Well, I bet Robbie Gallaty could beat him." But Robbie Gallaty's like 6'7", built like Furtick, but also used to train in MMA.
Oh, wow! So yeah, I don't know who that is, but he sounds dangerous.
He's a megachurch pastor here in the Nashville area.
Okay,
and I wouldn't be surprised if he makes his way up the Southern Baptist officer ranks in the future. Kind of a
solid dude.
He's probably 40-ish.
They're gonna love him. Man. So. They love anybody with backstory. You know what I mean? You throw a little interesting backstory in there, and it gets
When he's a former drug addict who was saved, but out of that, and so I mean, yeah, he's got a lot going.
Dude, how is this guy not selling like 50,000 books already? Can he not write?
I think he's making a niche in like the discipleship curriculum for big churches camp.
Got it.
But then he doesn't have a distinct theological camp.
Oh yeah,
and
he's doing the all things to all people thing right now.
Yeah, you either have to be, like a leadership book guy, your Andy Stanleys of the world, mm-hmm. or kind of a, have a theological angle, and he doesn't.
Yeah,
and that I don't mean that as an insult. It's kind of he doesn't claim a camp.
See, I feel like a thing that can work in Nashville, and I feel like I only know this because I know the Nashville area pretty well because it's a family. I feel like if you're the megachurch pastor with a little bit of a backstory. And you can entice like a little cadre of like famous or semi-famous people to come to your church. You're going to get a lot of like jersey jumper types who just want to come and look at the famous people at your church. I feel like that's a thing that it really would only work in a couple of markets. And Nashville is one of those markets. You know what I mean? Like we have enough famous people in Nashville who are also pseudo Christian or Christian that you can make that work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's interesting because that even happens at like good churches, not just sort of like your big airbrush places where, you get enough of these like Christian hymn writers and stuff at a place and people are like, oh, I'm going to go to the Village Chapel because there's a whole bunch of these artists there and stuff like that. And of course, it's called the Village Chapel. Uh-huh. But yeah, I think that's – and then if you're the pastor of that church, you have built-in famous people endorsements.
Yeah, that's true, dude. All you got to do is like
all of a sudden you're like, I got Keith and Kristen Getty. I got Sandra McCracken. I got, just like run down your list of these different, like, and again, they're sort of in a camp, but like, that's the camp you're trying to sell books to.
So. All the Marlin, dude, all the Marlin in one place,
Yeah. It's like, I didn't know Marlin swam in schools, but here we are.
Dare to dream, man. Dare to dream. Well, one day when we start our podcasting empire, Piper, our podcast network, that'll be us. We'll do it. Man, I would love to have a successful business. Doggone it. I want to fall like backwards into like piles of cash, like all my friends, let's make that happen.
Yeah. What aspect of our souls do we have to forfeit to do that?
Well, that's the question, dude. And that's
I'm wondering what I'm willing to amputate.
Yeah. So theoretically, I mean, not so theoretically, Silverdome will probably come out in a year or so. And I'm thinking, like, if people watch that and they like it, and I had the opportunity to write just a hot garbage, like, Jerry Bruckheimer kind of movie that would bring me piles of cash, I would do it. Like, I would do that in a heartbeat. So that's a sellout scenario that I'm comfortable with. I'm trying to think of other sellout scenarios. See, I wouldn't be good at, like, I know so little about business. I wouldn't even know how to be like unethical as a slumlord. You know what I mean? I wouldn't know the first thing about it, So I feel like that's off the table. Yeah. I don't know, man. What do you think?
Yeah. I feel like the areas that I could figure out how to be unethical or slimy are more in the marketing side of things. Like again, I think I could turn myself into an influencer of some kind, like the self-promote-y kind of person.
Yeah.
To the tune of significantly increased book sales.
Yeah.
But I also like to be able to lie down and sleep at night and not feel disgusting about myself.
Yeah.
So I think that that's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I could probably spin that into to more – but that's not the same as starting a business.
Yeah.
You know, that's that's just sort of selling yourself.
Yeah.
I think I could figure out the slumlord thing.
Yeah, you probably could, dude.
I mean, it just – I think the goal of a slumlord is buy a property and spend no money on it and make money on it. So dude, if you can rent it – if you can rent it out and spend no money on it,
here's my problem as it pertains to business. This is my Achilles heel. I always want whatever business idea I'm pursuing or whatever I go in – and I have started companies. Like we started a film company to make Silverdome. Whatever I'm involved in, I want it to like – get me on a heart level. I have to believe in it. I have to be really excited about it. Whereas I don't have the mentality to just go like, hey, there's a condemned building. I'll make it into really crappy apartments and rent them for like, you know, way over value and make a pile of cash. Like I'm just not that person. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't get excited right about it the way that I think certain people who are really good business people, they're like, whatever it is that can make me money, I'll buy it. I'll flip it. I'll do it. And those are the people that end up having like major cashish. I'm not one of
those people. Some people are just like they are energized by the deal making.
That's right. Yeah, that's
you know, and the transaction and the margin and whatever.
Yeah.
And I just to me, those are always things that I look at and I'm like, I get the value of those monetarily, but also they I'm with you. Like I have to care about this thing to invest in it. And then those things are like the caboose. They just get dragged along. Like the money just gets dragged along. Or in my case, doesn't get dragged along.
Exactly. Dude, I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen if I get a little bit of money. Let's say Silverdome does really well. You know, we make a huge distribution deal. I get a little bit of cash in my pocket. I'm totally going to invest in a minor league baseball team and then promptly lose all my money. That's the arc. Like, that's what's
going to happen. Yeah, might not be the best time to do that.
Yeah, exactly. In that there's not ever going to be minor league baseball again, probably.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of minor league baseball teams that that close their doors in the next year and a half, it seems. I hope that's not the case, but it seems possible.
Either, that's super depressing, but that's for sure what's going to happen. In addition to all of the rest of sports closing its doors indefinitely, until we eradicate all danger and disease from the face of the earth, no more sports. But anyway, Piper, this has been fun, man. These questions have been really good. Speaking of sports, we should probably address the sports questions in a specific dedicated Happy Rant Sports app, which we haven't done in a while.
Yeah, there was some questions about the Titans. There was some questions about, I think, some minor league sports questions. There's some questions about, like, sports in the bubble predictions for, like, how the pandemic's going to ruin everything.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we've got some topics on the table from listeners. And so we could definitely do another episode.
Well, let's do one, man. Let's we'll confab off the air as to when that's going to be. But, Piper, we've done what we always do in this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout several topics, several great topics. Shout out to our fan base. We have the best fans in the world of podcasting. I'm convinced of that. Great people, great questions, great show, Piper. And we will see you. Wait, no. I always want to sign it off like my other podcast. See, I'm rusty. We've wandered to and fro. Until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
What do you do when your world is falling apart? How do you march when it would be easier to stay where you are and die? Join me every week on the March or Die podcast, and we'll discuss that and so much more.